G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Adam Romanaskis is the former Bombers champion and these days manager to the Stars. It's great to have him with us on a Friday morning. Good morning, Rama.
Good morning. There's an incident. There's an incident early.
You know what? I've been waiting for this.
There is an incident.
I've been waiting for...
And there could be an explosion.
I've been waiting for this. This is the culmination of poor time management. That's what it is. This is the Sheffield Shield catching up with my man.
I hope he can hear us wherever he is. We're not sure what floor he's between.
I don't know.
He's home. He's not here.
He's absolutely not here. I don't know who he is or where he is, but he's not here. That's all we know. This is the product of being the boss and not being in the office.
Correct.
And being at the MCG instead.
Correct.
And poor time management.
Correct.
And all of a sudden, he's not here for the start of the show.
Do we need to explain why?
Well, no.
I think we should.
No, I think we let him do it.
We let him do it?
I think it's more important when he does it.
Yeah, I think for everybody to have a really good laugh, I think we wait.
An emotional outburst from...
It could be sweat beads all over the forehead. The shirt maybe have a little bit of sweat, a little bit of perspiration. This is going to be terrific. We will wait. We will wait for our men.
Well, if he gets here. I reckon he slept in. I reckon it's just a pure case of sleeping. I'm running with sleeping. I'm running with sleeping and doesn't care. That's what I'll be saying to him. Otherwise, he's got to prove me wrong.
I think there may be a little incident in our building.
I'm not so sure. I reckon it's pure sleeping stuff.
Pure sleeping?
Yep. I'm running with that until such time as I'm proven to incorrect. Okay. Hey, can you tell me, Rama, just on the back of what's been happening in the world of sport in the last couple of days, of the papers particularly, can you explain to me the interest in Barry Hall and Paul Gallen?
Look, I know Barry. Barry's a lovely guy. I actually got the chance to work with him for a couple of years on Fox Footy with the Foxtel Cup, which was many years ago. And Baz is an absolute gentle giant when you know him. But these two guys, Barry Hall and Paul Gallen, fighting tonight. I don't know. Baz is, what is he, 42? And Gallen's 36, 37. I'm not sure why they would want to do it.
I'll tell you why they want to do it. Because of too many reasons, the winner's thrust into a...
Sonny Bill Williams.
...fight with Sonny Bill Williams.
Yes.
But I must admit, I bring it up because I have zero interest, but somebody seems to have some interest.
I have a little bit of interest. I do have a little bit of interest.
These people aren't boxers.
No.
It's like me and you going head-to-head in the ring and people caring. And I will clearly win that battle.
Well, that's not quite the case. Paul's had a number of fights. I think he's coming up to his 10th fight, maybe.
He's not a have you seen him box?
Yeah, I have.
He's not a boxer, mate.
Barry can box.
Yeah, Barry can, but he's not a boxer.
No. Not at 42.
And he's 42.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued as for the interest. In fact, I'll throw it out the SMS. 0416 90 50 52. Any interest at all? I'm in the no care basket.
Well, Danny Green's
in the best, by the way.
Danny Green's a promoter.
Yeah, he's doing a good job. He's doing a real good job. Yeah.
It's on pay-per-view tonight, so the main event channel on Foxtel. So it'd be interesting to find what the numbers are post-fight, to see how many buys or subscriptions there are of the fight. So I do have some interest.
Okay. Righto, you're in the interest basket. I'm in the absolutely none, but there seems to be... Danny is doing a hell of a job. Whoever's paying him per article or second on TV screens, and he is a rich man because he is
Well, I think he's
fire.
Found a nice little window for this fight where it's a reasonably quiet sport weekend or sporting weekend. So he's found a nice little window where he knew that, yes, it may get the publicity that it needed. And, yeah, I think people, well, I know I am. I'm interested.
Righto. Okay. Well, 0416 90 50 52, any interest at all? We've been joined by Adam White. Morning, Adam.
Morning, Daniel. Adam,
how are you? We start at 6 o'clock, don't you?
Yeah.
Now 10 minutes past.
10 minutes past 6.
Is there an incident?
Sleeping? It's been...
I was almost...
Overworked.
I was about to call the fire brigade.
Couldn't get out of bed.
Stuck in a lift. You know who saved me? Joey Pignataro. He prized the door open on level 6.
With his powerful arms.
With his powerful arms. He's like Superman. And I could feel the doors opening, and I was absolutely petrified. I was going to just fall out of the lift well and go down 9 floors or something.
How did you feel in there?
I was starting to feel a bit tense. But you know what the issue was? I sensed that the lift wasn't working properly because it took a while for it to come. And when it opened, it just didn't, I didn't have a good feel about it.
And you jumped in?
Is this the new lift or the old lift?
The old lift. But the thought of walking 8 stairs in my current state, I thought I was probably a safer bet to catch a dodgy lift than actually get up the stairs. And that almost proved to be my downfall.
I don't know where we're
going. John Bowden and Joey Big Dottaro, they were like calling out to me. I felt like one of the kids in the cave. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? I can hear you. Where are you?
Oh, boy.
Brian, I couldn't have said it better myself. So you knew that there was a problem, and despite the fact that you had a great... And which we have had some problems around here with Lifty. Just why there's a new lift and an old lift, because we're upgrading the lift. We're doing, in fact, it's called, Rama, lift, what is it, remodification, modernization, lift modernization is what they're calling it. Nah. Basically just putting in new lifts.
The old lifts so back issues. When the Empire State Building was first put together.
So there's been some challenges through the journey. When you get a feeling that there is a lift concern, the last thing you want to do, Rama, is hop into it.
Hop in, yeah.
Well, I had a decision to make.
You did.
I potentially could have died walking up the stairs.
Or died in a
stuck
cave.
In a lift where I needed some emergency services help.
And we'd open the door 4 weeks later and there'd just be this skeleton.
But Joey saved the day.
What was your initial thought when the lift stopped?
What do you mean?
Well, did you think, oh, geez, I'm going to be stuck here all morning?
Well, I wasn't sure.
A little bit of claustrophobia?
Sure. It was starting to kick in.
Yeah. Sweating?
No, it was just starting to kick in that I start to... Well, no, I always feel that, you know, the fire brigade would help. I've been stuck in a lift before.
Sorry?
I have been stuck in a lift before.
Where?
Oh, some shopping centre where the fire brigade was called. It was all pretty exciting.
Why are you in a lift in a shopping centre?
Didn't want to take the escalator?
Because there was a pram situation, okay?
Escalator. Perfect.
I've tried that before with the escalator and that didn't end too well, so...
How do you bugger up an escalator?
Huh?
How do you bugger up an escalator with the pram? You just put it on the escalator.
There was like a pusher situation, you know, rather than the big pram, the pusher. So I thought it was a bit of a lighter conveyance, so we'd be okay. But as the sign says, don't put a pusher down the escalator. I thought, no, I'll be right.
Push it.
No, you hold on. Sometimes what happens is that the pusher may get jammed, and there's a situation where you get to the bottom and you create a real sort of bottleneck. Where the pram doesn't go anywhere and people start tumbling over the top of you. That has happened before.
You've found yourself in a lot of situations over the years. It's fair to say?
Yeah, it seemed to.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm here. The lift was the issue.
The one common denominator in this is who?
Me.
Yes. Correct.
Yeah. It's a fair question to ask yourself, though. I was honest with myself. Yeah. Do I get in a dodgy lift or do I walk up the stairs? And may not make it in my current situation. So I took the dodgy lift. That's okay. I made the wrong call. I'm here, though.
Mick Shark has just sent me a text. He'd like to know which lift so he can avoid it when he comes in later on.
The old one.
The old one.
The one on the right.
The one on the right, Shark. Yes. When you get to the foyer, it's the one on the right.
Yes.
Take the one on the left.
Just press the new.
Wait for the left one. That's very important for Mick, who doesn't want to get stuck into the elevator.
Did you have any lift problems this morning?
No issues.
Did you?
I got jumped in the lift, though.
I press both buttons.
What do you mean? There's only one.
No, there's two buttons.
There's two buttons.
Two buttons.
Yeah, down the bottom, not where I get in.
Where do you get in? Oh, CP5.
Yeah, seven.
Seven.
Mm. Yeah.
So, and usually I would get into the right one, but the left one came first this morning.
Anyway, I'm here.
Well, just settle yourself in, because we've got a busy show. We've got lots to talk about. Did you know, Bama and Whitey, that Ross Lyon... is a required media talent because he's not coaching next year. It looks like our man Scotty Gallen's got in the score today that he's going to be hot on the list, hot on the agenda for the Footy Classified crew on a Monday night. How do you reckon Roscoe would go with Caro and Hutchie and who else is on that? Lloydie,
yeah. It'd be good viewing, I think, early doors.
It'd be a very different mood, wouldn't it?
Well, Ross has got to then bring the agenda to the table rather than answer questions. And how he used to answer questions out of press conferences was sometimes compulsive viewing also.
Well, that's right. He always enjoyed listening to Ross. Mm. But he was the answerer rather than the questioner and the agenda setterer. It'd be interesting. Because he is quite clearly a very knowledgeable football personality.
Oh, no doubt about that.
From a coaching perspective. Mm. Not sure the politics and the news cycle of footy is really his wheelhouse, is it?
Well, I don't think he really cares for it.
Well, that's my thing.
Yeah.
So it becomes a very, very interesting conversation if he goes, oh, I don't care about that.
Mm.
Are you surprised he's not in clubland in any aspect?
No, I'm not surprised. I think it's 12 months. He needs 12 months away from the game, Ross.
Right.
I think he will be back in clubland at some stage. He always said he was going to be a career coach.
Yep.
Obviously, there's still a payout to be had with Fremantle, so his wage is sorted from that point of view for 2020. So can effectively go and double dip and go and work in the media for 12 months, then potentially look for another role in the season 2021. I think we will see Ross Lyon back in the AFL scene at some stage. Whether it's 2021 or not, that's to be seen.
Hmm.
Ross is a good coach.
It's hard to argue with that.
I think it's very hard to argue with that. Now, there's a couple of, I think, on the way out, feedback that Ross may have been given that he may or may not have agreed with. So whether he's able to go and work on that over the next 12 months remains to be seen.
Hmm. Would you put Ross on a TV show like that panel show? Whitey, or a media executive?
Maybe not a TV show as such. I think he'd be a great game analyst.
Mm.
And even a situation in Fox Footy where you're sort of on the Friday night game where they have the panel at halftime and after the match. But I think in a show like Footy Classified, you need to buy into that whole footy news cycle and issues cycle. He's always been very cynical about that and has never particularly liked it. But I think you'll find he'd be very good.
Yeah. Well, Ross's genius was his tactics.
Yeah, I think he'll be very good. And I think someone will certainly, we were actually talking about this off-air yesterday about where Brad Scott's at the moment. Is he going to be at the AFL? Is he going to be in the media?
He's going to be at the AFL.
So
he'll be basically 2IC to Steve Hocking.
Yeah, so it's interesting that two very experienced coaches where I think if we were having this conversation this time last year, we wouldn't even imagine the fact that either Ross Lyon or Brad Scott wouldn't be coaching football in 2020. But I think both of them, it would be seen as a short-term thing rather than a long-term thing, particularly with Ross Lyon.
I think with Ross, it's a short-term thing. Brad, I'm not so sure.
Mm. It'll be interesting.
I don't know if Brad, if you said to Brad right now, do you want to coach again, I think he would say no.
I haven't...
Really?
I think at this point, maybe that might be true.
Mm.
I haven't seen a paper yet because I was stuck in a lift and they weren't selling papers in the lift. But
get it earlier then.
Yeah.
It would have been earlier, yeah.
So,
take the step.
Because there is a suggestion that there is... that Footy Classified might go to a couple of days a week.
Yeah, Monday, Tuesday night.
Well, back to back.
Yeah, prime time.
Oh, boy. Where's Brian when you need him? Brian?
Oh, boy.
Brian, I don't think we need Monday, Tuesday, do we?
No. Well, with already the saturation of football throughout the week, it's too much. Now, I do agree with Whitey quite often, actually, but this time I wholeheartedly agree with him, is that the coaches need to set the agenda for what's spoken about during the week on a Monday press conference. Now, we don't hear from most coaches now until later in the week. So if we want to do this better moving forward, the coaches need to speak on a Monday. All coaches need to speak. I know they do their little press conference after the game, but that's a 5 or 10 minute thing about the game. But then you don't hear from them until well into the week. If we're able to hear from them earlier in the week, I think that news cycle throughout the week will be a lot better.
Former North Melbourne coach Brad Scott will play a key role in the AFL's revamped football department and game trends analysis next year. In the position, Scott closely examined game trends and congestion after 9 new rules were introduced for the 2019 season, but will only be one aspect of a broad role, which will also involve some key commercial and business matters as well as stadium and broadcasting issues, mental health, and the AFLW. Brett Scott, AFL. That's his role. There you go. Bit of activity for us.
That's a good ball to pick out Irvine, and potentially an even better one for Adam Taggart. And that is a splendid finish by Adam Taggart to put Australia in front in the 13th minute. They side the Jordanian defence apart, and Taggart, who is banging form for his club, did the rest.
That was enough. That was enough for the Socceroos overnight in Jordan. 1-0 was the result and the end of full time for their World Cup qualifier against Jordan. It's the first time in Socceroo history that they've won in Jordan. We spoke to Simon Hill yesterday about the challenge of playing over there against this team. They've been the nemesis of the Socceroos through World Cup qualifications through the journey. But too good, the Socceroos. A great finish by Adam Taggart at the 13th minute after a beautiful ball through, just by the way. So the Socceroos continue on their merry way in the World Cup qualifiers. They've got a bit of a break now until they get the next one, I think. But that was a good result for our boys overnight. So well done to them. A very fine, polished performance by the Socceroos. They had to withstand a big second half from Jordan and park the bus and stop them from scoring in the second half. But well done to Arnie's boys.
Have you ever heard of Adam Taggart before?
Yes. Yes, I have. Okay. Have you not heard of Adam?
No.
Right.
Where does he play?
He plays football.
Yeah, but what?
Well, I've only heard him in Socceroos colours. I don't know, follow him through his club days. Mm. But he's been a Socceroo for a while. Hasn't he, Rama?
Yeah, he has. Yeah. Absolutely. We're going to talk a little bit of cricket because I just want to start with Whitey.
Shortly we will, but John's on the road, wants to talk to you, Rama. Good morning, yes. John.
Okay, fellas. Yeah, I reckon it's good, this boxing thing. Not much else happening in the sport. It's in the middle of the footy season. I think it's great. I'd like to see James Hurd and Gil McLaughlin go at it. Actually, I think it'd be great. Don't you reckon? Look, the boys have obviously trained, these two fellas, so let them have a go.
Oh, no, I'm all for them having a go. No dramas. I mean, they're just getting a lot of coverage for a fight that really doesn't mean much, I must admit.
You wouldn't want to see James Hurd fight.
Is it getting coverage in The Age or just the Herald Sun?
Just the Herald Sun, I think, at this stage.
Seemingly a News Limited situation.
That's right. That's why it's getting so much coverage.
Well, Danny Green's doing a great job. Doing a hell of a job.
Now,
just carrying through, just checking the Fairfax publications.
No, there's not much in there.
Seemingly, it's not as impressive. Oh, no, it's got a bit of coverage. There it is, page 40. I have to go deep.
You'll be happy with this. Pencils are out and iPads are in for suburban scorers in cricket.
That's been happening for a while, Rama.
Are you happy with that?
Well, through the My Cricket website, you can actually pretty much get live scores if you're not playing. Mm. Or if you're in another ground, you can see what's happening. That's been sort of hovering around for a while now. That's not a new thing.
I'm asking if you're
happy. Well, I like to use the four-colour pens and
I saw your son, too, when he came to the Bells Hotel that morning.
Yeah, he's learning how to score. Yeah. I think it's very important to understand how to score.
Sounds like it's going to be a waste of time.
Potentially, yes.
It's going to be a waste of time.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah. My understanding is there was a request for extra bandwidth on Tuesday night for the live streaming of the My Cricket website. Because there was a bit of a clinic being put on and people were enamoured. And there's been printouts of the wagon wheel sent all around the world about how to orchestrate innings. All in vain in the end. But regardless, impressive, to say the least. That's my understanding. But yes, you're right, Rama. The iPad. The first time I saw the iPad was on Sunday when I popped in to say good day to the boys at my cricket club. And I saw the iPad. What's going on here?
Yeah. I don't know.
And they showed me, and it's pretty impressive.
It's almost becoming compulsory.
It's easy. It's very easy.
There's some traditions we need to keep. I think the cricket scorecard is one of those.
Yeah, I do.
But there's
different
cricket scorecards. I mean, you look at the way that the chief statisticians in media and broadcast outlets score. It's very different to the way that we score on the weekends in the green scorebook. It's different. They do, I don't know, grids and graphs and stuff. And
a lot of that's around balls faced and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You have two going at the same time, wow, potentially, as well.
So that's over the top.
Like at the Sheffield Shield yesterday, they're still scoring the same
commentating
way they would normally do. What's that?
You're commentating that?
I am. Long day yesterday.
Who does your scoring there?
No, we don't have a scorer.
No, I know that, but is there some...
The scoreboard.
Yeah.
You've got the scoreboard, the Cricket Australia information in front of you as well.
Yes.
You're taking notes on certain things that happen throughout the course of the day. sort of milestones and balls faced to, for partnerships and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's what I was more getting at.
That's up for you to what you think is relevant information to the people that are following it. But, I'm a bit like you. I actually think it's important to have it done, the scores done appropriately, because when you're checking things, particularly when you're, there's an element of trust at local cricket. When if you don't have your own score, you're getting two out batsmen or the tail enders to do the scorebook, that they actually do marry up, because there's always two done to sort of cross check each other, that you're not just putting things into a computer, that you're actually having both done.
Well, the score sheets are gone in basketball now, so that's all done.
That's true.
Little iPad.
Which is good. Yeah. Basketball scoring,
easy,
is the most terrifying
easy.
Experience
no.
in my parenting sporting life.
No, very easy.
No, I get absolutely flustered.
Why?
Because I don't know if I'm pressing the clock at the right time, and the opposition is going to get angry with me if the ball isn't inbounds. I haven't pressed the clock, and I get stressed.
Basketball. A lot of parents do get stressed doing it. They're putting fouls up as points and points up as fouls.
Yeah, and seeing the old system where you had the little box, there where you flick the. And the buttons. I pressed the wrong button, and you got to reset the clock. It's a disaster. No, it's very stressful. That's a job for the world champ, not for me. I can't do it. I don't like it at all. I'm all for the iPad and basketball because it takes that stress out of my life a bit.
Yeah, Emma does the scoring too. I don't do that.
It's a very stressful
job. I thought you would be all over the scoring.
I stay away from everyone else, all the other parents, and just watch from afar. Just take it in.
So you don't engage with anybody?
Just antisocial. Completely antisocial. I don't want to get involved in all the parents get right into the games and, you know, start yelling at referees and over celebrating goals. I don't want to be part of that.
Do you think you should educate those parents?
Well, I don't know them well enough to.
Have you thought about it at some stage?
I'll just judge them from afar.
Did you know that Manus Labuschagne, his bat path wasn't good enough? And that's why he's tweaked his bat path from his downswing in a golf swing.
Yes.
He's tweaked his bat path, and that's made the difference. That's why he's now an exceptional batsman. It was coming from his hips and his back leg, and they fixed it. They addressed the position.
Now where's it coming from?
Well, no, he's altered his position of hip and back leg.
Okay.
Hips a little bit more side on, therefore keeping that back foot parallel to the crease.
So not George Bailey style?
Well, there was a photo yesterday going around on social media. We're going to speak to Alex Doolan, by the way, after 7 o'clock, who had a big Shield game for Tasmania. George is facing the wicketkeeper.
Yes.
And then one of his teammates was facing the square leg umpire. Mm. Some contrasting stances out there at the moment in cricket. But this is the whole Steve Smith thing. You do you, boo.
Yep.
As my daughter says, you just do you. Whatever works for you, go and do it. And Marnus has worked out what works for him. And we're getting an exceptional response.
Whitey?
We'll talk about this after the break, because I watched Marnus bat yesterday very closely and got a few observations about that and a few other things. So do you want to do it after the break? I don't know, because it'll take a while. On the radio this morning?
Well, we're not sure you're here.
Still over the place.
You let us know when you're here, and we'll start from there. Ready, go. It's always great to have Dean Lester with us on a Friday morning for the Friday Form, the world's greatest form analyst as far as we're concerned here on The Breakfast Club and entire 927 family. In fact, Dino's back again. Good morning, Dino.
Yeah, morning, Daniel.
Great to have you with us. Zipping Classic Day, is it a good day for you historically?
It's a tricky day because you're trying to work out if they've got petrol left in the tank after busy spring carnivals, or there's horses that have been aimed more towards Sandown, whether their preparations have been stalled earlier in the spring. So I think you just got to try and find the balance of that.
Is there a way of knowing? Do you have to talk to people to actually know that, or do you just sort of use your feel?
Oh, I think you've got to just sort of, you know, play it a little bit by feel, because I think even the trainers, they wouldn't be lining them up unless they thought they had something left, and then yet on the day they don't fire, or some horses elevate as they're coming through the grades.
Well, this is still some pretty rock-solid prize money on offer tomorrow at Sandown and the Hillside Tractors, by the way, for Zipping Classic Day. You can make some more of that, if you like, with the people at the TAB. Nick Quinn's a representative from there this morning again on the Friday Form. Good morning, Nicholas.
Good morning, Daniel. Good morning, all.
How'd you end up in the marquees on the Melbourne Cup Carnival?
If you were taking the over or under time I spent in marquees, the under was an overwhelming winner and a well-backed favourite.
Unders?
Yes.
Right. I'm surprised by that. I thought you would have been overs. I would have taken the overs there.
No, you would have been losing.
Get some real coverage.
Although the money's working because last night, of course, was the Bachelorette finale.
Was it?
And Carlin won. Carlin was the favourite throughout. Pretty much started about a 6-4 favourite going in. And was the $1.20 favourite going into the finale last night. So for those that took the multis and put Carlin in, heading into the races over the weekend, there you go.
Who would have done that, Ramo? Would anyone
there would have been people.
No one would have taken
it. Was one of the great $1.20 picks of all time.
No one would
that
have taken
overs.
Your
What's
more
mate.
Concerning is you're watching it.
Yeah. And investing financially, that's even worse.
Like, mate, go and tend to your lettuce outside.
Don't get jealous.
I'm not jealous. I'm not jealous at all, but you're watching The Bachelor or The Bachelorette.
For those first-timers that have joined us on the Friday Form, what we do is have a bit of a look at the quaddy for the next day's play in Victoria. We're at Sandown on the hillside track, as I said, for Zipping Classic Day. It's a great day, I reckon, at the end of the... It's coming towards the end of the Melbourne Spring Carnival. And we start with race 7. Here's the first look at the quaddy team. Let's get focused on the Sandown Guineas over the 1,600 metres. Three-year-old Group 2 set weight race, and there is 10 going around. There are 10 going around tomorrow. Dino, the scratching of Cavalmo for Chris Waller, which means a fair to remember for Dan O'Sullivan, who was fantastic in his chat with Michael Felgate the other morning on Racing Pulse, has got the favourite, a fair to remember with John McNeil in the saddle.
Yeah, he does. It looks a really good race for the fillies, I think. They haven't won this race for a while, but not that many contest it. And I think that fair to remember. She ran well at Flemington, and she probably should have won there. It was only a benchmark 70, but in saying that, this isn't a strong renewal of the Sandown Guineas, so she's well placed. I like the other filly, though, Pretty Brazen. I think her win at Caulfield was good, and her run Melbourne Cup Day was excellent. So I think she's got a very good chance of winning the Guineas. I think the best of the males is Banquo. I think he still had plenty to offer last Saturday at Flemington. He won not by a huge margin, he won by a length, but I still think he was going strongly through the line, and I think he can run very well. I think a fair to remember, certainly a good chance. I think she's well enough found in the market off what was, as I said, the weakest race class-wise on Cup Week. And Heart of Puissance, who's only had two starts, he's very green. Got a lot to learn, but I liked his win at Moonee Valley, and I think the bigger track is going to suit him a lot better. So they'll be the four I'll be taking, but I'll be leaning to Pretty Brazen.
Any last start winners in this one, Quinny? What's the market say?
It's the two non-last start winners, though, that have been the firmest, the fillies down the bottom. Pretty Brazen, as much as $6 initially, now a $3.30 favourite, losing 8 cents in the dollar with Cavalmo heading to Newcastle instead of Sandown. A fair to remember, a $3.50 second elect, Banquo at $4.40, Heart of Puissance, the other runner. In the market, they're at $4.40.
Call Me Seamus is in your numbers, Quinny. You've got that Call Me Seamus in there for Philip Stokes. Luke Nolan, the saddle. Could have seen Luke Nolan getting some winners through the carnival, Dino?
It certainly was, Daniel. He's he's sort of without a home when Peter Moody retired. Yeah. And he's built up contacts in different stables, and but certainly with the Hayes Dabney yard over the last 6 months or so, he's worked very hard there.
Quinny, just from an investment perspective, after the Melbourne Cup Carnival, the fabulous 4 days at Flemington, do you see a big surge at the end to try and recoup for a lot of people?
It is a very popular betting day, and historically there's been a lot of short price favourites on this day as well, with varying degrees of success. So it's always very popular, and I think what it does do really well is sort of continue the momentum from the Flemington Carnival into Saturday. So people that have been bitten by the racing bug over the spring, they get another really good day of racing. And for those that love it each and every day, it's a smorgasbord of betting opportunities.
There you go. That's what's happening at Sandown tomorrow. Rammer, one job.
10, 1, 11 and 4.
10, 1, 11 and 4 for the first leg of the quaddy tomorrow. Zipping Classic Day. And it's race number 7. Race number 8 is the Zipping Classic, $300,000 up for grabs. Group 2, Wait for Age Affair over the 2,400 metres. Been won by some excellent horses through the journey, Dino. Of course, Zipping being one of those, as George told us, won it 4 times in a row. And we've got 10 going around in this edition. And Southern France for the Mare Eustace stable, who've got a couple of runners in this race, is favourite with Mark Zara in the saddle at tab.com.au.
Yeah, I think that's the most interesting point in the race, Daniel, is that I think the Mare Eustace stable will win it. I don't necessarily know with which one of their three. I'm tipping the outsider of them in Del Herald, who I thought was ticking over well before the Geelong Cup. Didn't really fire at Geelong, but freshened up. Did run second in this race last year to the Taj Mahal, and I think it has to be anywhere near that sort of form, and I think he'd be very hard to beat. Southern France saw plenty of the countryside in the Melbourne Cup. He was wide all the way. Total forgive run there. Humidor, he's getting fitter off a long spell because of, this is virtually a rehab preparation for him, but you just wonder if he's one of those horses in point that, you know, he might be getting to the end of it for now, and this is just one more run, but he's such a classy horse. And Chapada, who's essentially been disappointing because he probably should have won the Victoria Derby as a three-year-old and ran very well in the Rose Hill Guineas to the Autumn Sun. His three runs back have been okay, and he's at least, I think, a horse on the up going into this race. So for that reason, I'm going to put him in next best. So, I think it should be a good race for the Murray and Eustace team.
Just on Del Herald, Dino, a lot of people will look at the form guide and see he ran 10th of 11 in the Geelong Cup last time out, but the excuses that day wasn't suited to horses making ground, and the form prior to that had been quite encouraging, especially the run in the Bart Cummings.
Yeah, I think he was building pretty well. I didn't use that much as an excuse because he was in the right spot. I just thought it was a pretty poor run, but whether he backed up a little bit quickly for him, he's had nearly 4 weeks between runs now to freshen up, so maybe that'll be in his favour tomorrow.
There has been specking for a long shot here. Number 10, Miss Siska, 21 into 10. Was second at Flemington last start to Ocean X, so on the relatively quick backup, what did you make of Miss Siska?
Yeah, the mares have run well off the matriarch into this race in recent years. A couple have placed. I don't think any have won, but they've run well. And first go at 2,400. She'll make her own luck up on the speed. I've got her more as a place chance, but she's going okay.
There's a good question off the SMS, Dean. I'm not sure we can have the answer, but I think it's nice to bring it up. When was the last time Lloyd Williams didn't have a runner in the Zipping Classic?
That would be a fair while ago, Daniel, because he's had the Taj Mahal the last couple of years. He's won it on other occasions, of course, Zipping four in a row. Legible won it in the early 2000s.
So, did Gallic win one?
Gallic won one, yeah, I think so. He's had a massive influence on the race, and, yeah, this year, no runners.
Good pick-up by the SMS. Well played to you, whoever that was. Anonymous it is at this stage, but well done. That is a good pick-up.
Big Maxie Gorn tweeted to Nick Williams during the week saying, "Where are my horses?" Because Big Max has a love affair with the stable. And Nick tweeted back, "If only we had a horse to run. Latrobe, Master of Reality, Twilight, Payment R." And he did the little plane emoji. Yucatan is not ready and Holmesman is off for a spell. So he doesn't have a runner there to go around this year.
You mentioned Southern France there. Dino's come back from the Melbourne Cup. We saw Magic Wand step back to the McKinnon distance of 2,000 metres on Saturday after running on the Tuesday. Surprised that there's not a few more Cup participants finishing off the campaign, having a crack at the cash here?
Maybe, but a lot of them are already on their way home,
well,
I suppose.
Most of them don't live here, I suppose.
Yeah. They don't live here, so they're not just trotting down to Sandown. So Tanby was another winner Tanby didn't have a win with Gallic, but he placed,
Right, good cleanup. But good SMS, well done. Keep them coming throughout the Friday form.
Isn't it funny how Zipping brings back so many loving memories from race fans and punters. What a popular horse he was. And he wasn't the absolute superstar, but to win any race 4 years in a row, and he was just one of those horses that everyone loved, a bit like your star Hartnell. He always tried his heart out was there at the elite level.
I'm going to go and hang out with Reg Fleming and just hang out with Hartnell one day. Man, Reg and Hartnell and I just hanging out. Three greats of the turf. Let's get through. Gave me nothing there, Ramo, numbers?
6, 5, 1, 8.
6, 5, 1, and 8 in the second leg of the quaddie, the Zipping Classic. Let's get to the third leg of the quaddie, the Pine Funeral Summons Stakes over the 1,500 metres, 4-year-old Nutmares, Group 3 event. And we've got 12 going around at this stage. And Fidelia, for your man, Robbie Griffiths, Dino, is favourite at around about 460 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, she'd have to be a good chance in this sort of race. She's another one deep in the preparation. Wasn't suited by the wet track on Derby Day. I think she can run well, but this is the leg I want to load up because these mares, not regular winners, a lot of them, but I'm going to go with number 3, Sweet Scandal. I thought she ran well over the Flemington Carnival. Gets a good run from the draw. 5, Platinum Angel. She's up in grade off the Sub-Zero handicap on Oaks Day, but she's got the weight relief here, and I just think this is a good race for her to run well. Fidelia has certainly got a very good chance, number 4. 1, Noir for the Wallace stable. but I'll be giving chances to 9, Gentico, who I just think hits this race at the right time, whether she's quite good enough, but she'll make her own luck, and I think she'll give a great sight for a long way, and 11, Vanuatu, who is very good at Moonee Valley. So I think certainly the toughest of the four legs of the quaddie, and yeah, I'll be searching wide.
Fidelia has been a bit of a head-scratcher this campaign, Dino. She has had bad luck at various times, obviously scratched from last Saturday in preference for this, but is there a thought she might not be going quite as well as we saw earlier on the year when she had that breathtaking campaign with the picket fences?
Yeah, she was going really well in the off-season, and she had form around like a horse like Shawnee, and Shawnee went to the weaker mares race in Melbourne Cup Week and won really well. I think if Fidelia had gone that path, she might have looked as good, but she went to the Group 1, and she's been running in a lot stronger races than the middle of the year. So I think she's probably going about the same. She doesn't have much luck because she just can't get going early. She's always out the back with a lot to do.
Number 2, Jamaican Rain, was meant to run at Flemington over the carnival and didn't. How much has that factored into your thought process here?
No, because I like her on the fresh side, so it's not really a problem that she's 4 weeks between runs, but I just think she'd need absolutely a bit more rain. And probably the last 12 months, she's had that one win in the Mannerism, which was a great ride by Damien Oliver, but she hasn't quite hit the mark of where she was about this time last year.
Right, that's Jamaica Rain, who, as you said, missed a start during the Flemington Carnival, but he's back tomorrow at Sandown. So, Rama, as we sum up race number 9, the third leg of the quaddie, can you tell me, please, what the numbers are for our punters?
3, 5, 4, 1, 9, 11.
3, 5, 4, 1, 9, 11. Let's get to the last leg, Dino. We've got 1,800 metres in the Eclipse Stakes to get through. It's a quality Group 3. And there are 12 going around. I know Quinny is very, very keen on one here, Dino, but setting sail as favourite for Charlie Appleby at 220 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, well, he's the fascinating runner in the race, Daniel. He comes here with a good record. He's been in the money 7 of 9, and his other two runs he finished fourth. So he's obviously a talent, and I think would be very hard to beat. I've just loved the way that Pacadali's been going all preparation. Ooh. He had a massive weight at Kyneton and narrowly beaten. He was very good there, and just because I know him and I know how honest he is, I'm going with him. I respect setting sail. I think Plan CL's ready to do something. Number 3, I thought his run Melbourne Cup Day was okay. I'm going to throw in, this is the Rammers Ruffy spoiler alert. Number 12, Zooey's Comet, who
Go again, who is it?
It's been a long couple of weeks, Daniel, but Zooey's Comet. The Lamming Stable have an unbelievable record in this race. Won it 2 years ago with Payroll. Last year they had a horse totally out of his grade. He excels, got beaten absolutely in the last stride of the race. Just seems to be a race that they set for every year. They won it with Bashful Girl, Eskimo Dan in previous times. So they've won 3 of the last 10 runnings or so and had long odds place getters. So I'm putting Zooey's Comet in.
Rammer, just for you, just and for the punters out there, just that love the Rammer's Ruffian, who doesn't? By the way, $61 and $11 for Zooey's Comet for the win in the place at the fixed market at tab.com.au.
I imagine there'll be some betting activity on Zooey's in the next couple of minutes.
I am in.
You know what'll happen? We'll be talking and I'll refresh and go, oh, now $41 for Zooey's,
exactly,
and there'll be toys
happen.
Out of the cot.
Righto, so there, Dino's thoughts. Quinny, you tell us about your no-brainer, because you've got an asterisk next to your tips in the paper today.
Yeah, I thought setting sail was a lock in the last. So once again, I'm a little bit deflated after speaking to the great man, Dean Lester, who has forgotten more than I'll ever know. But I thought this horse had been racing really well in tougher grade overseas and just looks a different gravy to the cattle he's going to be up against tomorrow.
Different gravy. Right, what's the market say? Do they believe you?
The market would indicate I'm right at this early stage. Has been $2.50 into $2.15. Has been one of the better backed runners anywhere across the globe tomorrow.
Anything else making any headway into the market?
In the last, we've got Pacadali now on the second line of betting at $4.80. Plan CL 7. Miss the Money Bags, $9. Savahat, a $9.50 chance. Dan and Roman at $14. And Zooey's Comet. I'm looking forward to giving you an update on this horse in about half an hour. Currently 61 and 11.
Not for long. Rammer.
1, 4, 3, and 12.
1, 4, 3, and 12 are the numbers. So if we run through all of our numbers, because I know that there's people out there, Rama, that when I pad for this long, start to get a pen out and make sure they've got all the numbers that we give to them for the Sandown Quaddy tomorrow. Okay. Zipping Classic Days. I just give them another 5 seconds to get their pen and get the paper ready to give us the numbers, Rama, of the Quaddy tomorrow, please.
Race 7, 10, 1, 11, and 4.
10, 1, 11, and 4.
Race 8, 6, 5, 1, and 8.
6, 5, 1, and 8.
Race 9, 3, 5, 4, 1, 9, 11.
3, 5, 4, 1, 9, 11.
And then race 10, 1, 4, 3, and 12.
1, 4, 3, and 12. Quinny, can you just give me an update on Zooey's Comet, please?
Have you bet?
No.
Zooey's Comet into $26.
Oh.
$26 and $6. It was 61 and 11 47 seconds ago.
If TAB Chief Media Officer Trent Langscale is doing this to troll us, I'm pretty disappointed.
Surely not. Dino, did you just get on when we were talking?
No, did not.
It's gone from 61 and 11 to 26 and 6 in 57 seconds now.
The disturbing thing is I've tipped it for fourth, so we don't get paid for fourth. So.
That sums up Aussie punters, though. Yeah.
That is remarkable.
People love a roughie. Yeah. If you go to Hong Kong and you tip a roughie, they look at you like you're taking the mickey out of them. Mm. They want a $2 favourite. They're like, oh, okay, it should win. It's $2. I'd be a king over
you
there.
You would be king over
I'm moving
there.
To Hong Kong, actually, maybe not. No, a bit going on over there.
Yeah, let it sit for a bit.
Bit of activity.
Just let it sit for a bit, particularly in the main streets. Stay out of there, Quinny. That is quite remarkable. I'm going to refresh that every 5 minutes now and see what happens. 61 and 11 into
Zooey's
26
Comet.
And 6. Goodness gracious,
man. Is
that
annoying you when you have your phone in front
of you? No, we're working at the moment, Raymond. We haven't got time. We've got to wait for the ad break to do this
stuff.
I saw
young Nicholas. He went into his banking app and then went into his TAB account and quickly may have transferred some money across.
Hand on heart, I'm not on at $61.
What'd you get on it?
No, I haven't backed it yet.
Righto. So they're the quaddy numbers, and that is the unbelievable market influence that our man Dean Lester has on the punting world. He is a freak, and we love him. Dino, why we love you, or why the punters love you, because the formula bet has been such a success for generations of Victorian punters. And who are we playing for this week, please?
We are playing for Jeremy Davey of Brooklyn, and for Jeremy, a $40 win bet race 4, number 1, Widgie Turf, a $40 win bet race 7, number 10, Pretty Brazen, and $40 on the pair and the all-up race 4, number 1, into race 7, number 10.
4, 1, 7, 10, Quinny. What does that give us at tab.com.au?
The all-up bet gets us $8.25.
I'd be happy nice. With that. Rama, that's a good thing.
That is a lovely thing.
$8.25. And we mentioned the Rama Ruffy before, which is the market mover of all market movers, race 10, number 12, Zooey's Comet. Any updates, Quinny?
No, still. Sure. Oh, that's extraordinary. I'll have to get a bet report sent through on exactly how many bets came through in that time. Imagine the poor bookie. He's got to work. He's got his coffee. It's 7 in the morning on a Friday, and then all of a sudden a $71 shot. He's standing it for a fortune.
Outrageous is what it is.
Should be listening.
Yes, correct.
Well, they should be listening. Absolutely. Well, all the bookies should be listening. That's right. So we've got racing tonight. Canterbury season starts tonight, Quinny. Is that right?
Yeah, Canterbury tonight. If you want a bit of Friday night fun, and hopefully a couple of winners there as well, and also racing across the state today. We've got Kyneton today and Cranbourne tonight.
That's right. So we've got
Moonee Valley tonight.
Moonee Valley tonight. Yeah, we've got a lot of racing today. If you want to get involved, Newcastle, Canterbury, Kyneton, Moonee Valley, got Sandown Hillside tomorrow for Zipping Classic Day. You've got your quaddy numbers, you've got your formula bet, you've got your Rama Ruffy, which we still can't believe what's happening, to be honest with you, and you've got the insight into the greatest mind of all time, Dean Lester, with us on the Friday Form. Dino, nice to have you with us, mate. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Daniel.
The bookies don't thank you, but the punters certainly do. Good stuff. Have a great weekend.
Terrific. Thanks, guys.
We'll hear more from Dean Lester across the weekend on RSN 927. Of course, he is the world's greatest form analyst. Quinny, you can't have Setting Sail, by the way. Give us another one.
Well,
because we know that's
your
favourite.
What about the one on the Sunshine Coast tomorrow?
We know that's
your
favourite.
The other one I quite liked is going against Dino's special, which is a big concern, but I thought William Thomas was going to be mighty hard to beat in race 4 at Sandown.
William Thomas?
Yep.
Right, that's race 4, number 5. So Dino likes number 1, Widgie Turf, and you like number 5, William Thomas. What's William Thomas paying?
$4.
And Widgie Turf is paying?
$2.50. Right, I think it's safe to say I don't have a great record going head-to-head with Dino.
Gareth Hall, who joins us for the Hall Pass on a Friday morning. Good morning to you, Gareth.
Good morning, Daniel, Adam, and to our listeners this morning. Hope you're well.
We are very well. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm looking forward to the fight tonight. Can't wait. Paul Gallen taking on Barry Hall.
You going?
I'm not going, so but I'll really be watching.
Are you paying for it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
You're going to pay for it?
Yeah, I will.
Why?
Because I've got nothing else to watch tonight.
No, and I thought it'd be a great idea. Have you got any interest?
Yeah, I have actually. Yeah. I'm fascinated by Barry Hall because he could box in the early part of his life when he was a star boxer in his teenage years before he turned to professional football, basically. And
yeah, kicked 800 goals.
He was pretty good. Yeah. I might try and get Brett Staker on RSN Central today just to give us a preview. And I think it'd be good stakes. And he may be able to tell Gal just to watch out for the hook. But I'm looking. I think Hall can win. I think he's at a good price. I know he's 42.
What's his price?
He's 220 with
he?
Tab.
Yeah.
They backed Gal as soon as the market went up. I think he was $1.80 into $1.60. I sound like Nick Quinn. It was a bet of $20,000 early doors.
On Paul Gallen?
Yes.
From Paul Gallen?
Probably. From a few of the Shark fans. Tiago Shark actually got out of his box and said, I want to back Gal.
You back the owner.
Yeah. So, I'm looking forward to the fight.
What about the poor old Andrew Maloney and Elton Dario? Fighting for the interim WBA super flyweight world title. It's a world title on the line. You're looking at Barry and Paul.
Well, that's how the world works these days, unfortunately. And I think it'd be okay for boxing. I'll watch the other fights. Ben Damon will be joining us, who hosts the main event on the Friday lunch on RSN Central today. And we asked him,
he's got a guest on who's going to
we asked him the very question, is it good for boxing? He says it is, because obviously I'll be watching it now. I wouldn't have been watching if Barry and Paul weren't fighting.
But are you going to watch Andrew and Elton?
Probably, yes. Yep. Yeah. If I'm paying $50, I will. I might as well get my money's worth. Who do you think wins that fight, Daniel?
Oh, I think Andrew's all over Elton, from what I've seen.
There's a couple of... Is there only the one world title fight?
My understanding is it's just the one world title fight. $2 booking fee applies. Check your local guides. For Barry v.
I'd laugh, bud, with the previews and the build-up. Like, Mark Robertson and Buzz Rothfield have both been, like, the special comments expert man for podcasts and all that for the Daily Telegraph and Herald Sun. Like, give me a spell. Why are they doing it?
Why wouldn't they?
Why?
Well, it's Code Wars. That's what the whole thing's built on.
Yeah.
Chief football writer of the Herald Sun. And you've got Buzz Rothfield, the chief rugby writer up there at the Daily Telegraph. Is it Daily Telegraph?
Yep.
Wherever he's writing. So why wouldn't they? It's Code Wars. This is what the whole thing's built on. Otherwise, this fight doesn't exist, Gareth.
Who are you tipping?
I don't care, mate.
No, you don't. I heard you this morning.
Couldn't give a fat rat's.
No. So what are you watching tonight?
I won't be watching
that. The cricket, the women's big bash.
Is that on tonight?
I think so.
There'll be a game on tonight.
It seems to be on every week.
Yep.
Well, it is on every week.
Well, it is on every week.
Yeah, there'll be an NBL game on tonight. A-League will be on tonight.
I'd prefer to watch the NBL, probably. I can flick. But I want to watch that
Perth
fight. Tonight.
Adelaide and Perth, you've got an affiliation with the people of Perth. You'd be all over that.
Perth will win.
Mm. In Adelaide? Watch out for the 36ers. They're coming. Mm.
I think they're struggling in the 36ers.
They're coming.
As soon as the coach says that he hasn't got enough money and he'd be a lot better if they gave him $4 million. Like, I love Joey Wright, but what message does that send to your playing group, your crap boys? If we could have more money, I'd buy better players. Like, Joey, you got to be... But you should know that. You're like, AFLW, you probably haven't got the greatest salary cap.
Not a huge cap.
No. You pay one player probably too much.
Who's that?
Statue.
The boxer.
Taylor.
Taylor,
do you know what she gets?
Yes, I do, actually.
Do you?
I know how much she pays to speak at an event.
She pays?
Yeah, well, we have to pay her to speak at an event.
Do you?
Yep.
Right. She good speaker?
Yes, very good.
She's a marquee player.
Bang for your buck, then.
Marquee player.
Marquee
player. How do you...
Tier one.
Okay.
It works in tiers.
So how many marquee players are you allowed to have?
Now, while you have three tier ones, you're going to have.
So does Daisy Pierce, does she become a marquee player once again after having a year out?
That's up to Melbourne. I'm not sure. Oh, okay. I don't know how that works.
Who are your three?
Well, we don't give our contract status at Carlton.
No, he can't.
We don't talk about contract status at Carlton.
Why? That was so close.
I didn't know.
Oh, I didn't know. No, it's not public knowledge.
All the fans deserve to know.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
What's your wage here?
What's your wage?
Well, I'm definitely on the bottom here.
What's your wage?
My wage?
Yeah.
How much?
Come on.
Just under six figures. That's true.
Right.
That's how life
works.
Is it?
Yeah. But I always find this conversation funny. Oh, footballers' salaries should be public. Hang on a minute. Why?
Why?
Why should a footballer's salary be public? Whitey?
I don't care about it, to be honest.
No, but there's a lot of people that think it should be public.
I think it's more about... Yeah, a lot of this has actually got to do with things like fantasy that we've got into our thinking about. We get our salary cap when we do our fantasy team, and we work out how much everyone costs and fit everyone in. Everyone knows what the salary cap is for each team, so it's sort of like it's that whole thing around trading and all that sort of thing. Is that people feel that they're entitled to know?
Yeah. Well, I had a chuckle the other day. Kane Corns said footballer salary should be public. And then in an express, someone asked him, well, what was your salary, Kane, through your career? And he wouldn't answer the question.
Well, that's stupid of Kane.
It's an unusual answer after that.
You know in America, you know what LeBron's on, don't you?
Yeah, but that's been public forever. I think everybody's wages in the States
and
are
this
public.
Is the other part of it is that we've got to be like America with everything. So
no, we don't.
No, I'm saying I don't think so. But that's the feeling is that we've got to be like America.
The other aspect that sometimes I think that the fans can get confused with is the Jack Martin situation. People early doors blow up after they read in the paper he's on this much, but
they're guessing. The papers
they are.
So we had the conversation before 7 o'clock, Hawley, about the mental health space. Mm-hmm. If players' wages became public, that would even amplify that conversation even more if a player was playing poorly about how much he was getting paid and if he wasn't performing.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you, but this is an interesting conversation around how Jack Martin gets to Carlton, and there has to be, I think there has to be some semblance of transparency around, oh, hang on a sec, how have they worked this out?
Well, he'll have to nominate his terms, so the clubs will know.
But that's where clubs use a loophole.
Will the public know?
The public won't know.
Right.
The clubs will know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Clubs will know.
And then it leaks out and then...
Yeah, that's right. So the loophole is that you can front end a contract, so...
Well, they're now saying now pretty much that Jack Martin will get paid $1 million a year for the first 2 years of his contract and then probably pie and coke for the last two.
Because they've got enough room in their salary cap to do it. Yeah. And that's why the punters need to understand that Carlton have to do that, really, and they should.
And that's what I'm saying. I think there needs to be some sort of transparency around that.
This is what I don't understand, why the pre-season draft is different to free agency. With free agency, it's the average of the contract that a club can match. So I don't understand why it's not the same in the pre-season draft.
Why wouldn't
it's not the average of the contract?
Why wouldn't Gold Coast just redraft Jack Martin and then get a better deal with him at the end of the year?
Why would Gold Coast want a player that doesn't want to be there?
Do they have to redraft him?
Who's that?
Who?
Jack Martin. Or do they just offer him another contract? No, he hasn't been cut.
He's delisted himself.
Been delisted. Yes.
Oh, right. Okay. So he can do
there's
that.
There's a small little window where a player can delist himself from the club. They've got to be out of contract, obviously.
I actually didn't know that. Mm. Yeah. Is that new?
No.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, out of contract, you can delist yourself. So then I'm out of here.
I'm surprised you don't know that.
No, I'm probably a bit disappointed in myself for not knowing that.
You can't know everything.
No.
There's lots of little loopholes.
Are you happy with the cricket squad, boys?
Adam's your man.
To me.
Adam's your man there.
Am I happy with the cricket?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have had Cameron Bancroft in there. But he's not going to play anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I don't. Why have they got a 14-man squad?
Well, they say they're having they need a concussion sub.
Ah.
So that's why Bancroft has been drafted into the squad, essentially. I probably would have kept Marcus Harris just based on the fact that I don't think anyone had done well enough to knock him out of the team. That being said, I understand that Harris against the moving ball is still a little bit suspect, potentially, particularly in Brisbane and then under lights in Adelaide, which is where the first two matches are.
And they've gone to Joe Burns, who knows obviously how to play in Brisbane and has played night cricket before. So
I thought that was a no-brainer to pick Joe Burns in front of Marcus Harris. He's had his opportunity, averages 24 in Test cricket. He's made runs okay this season, but they've been on flat decks. Joe Burns...
Well, no, that's incorrect.
Well, he made 150 in Tasmania.
And a 60 in Perth.
But Joe Burns has been playing some pretty good cricket on a difficult wicket in Brisbane for the last season and a half. He averages 40 in Test cricket, which should stand for something, surely.
Well, he should have been in the Ashes.
He should have still been there in the squad.
Yeah, correct. And I would rather him bat for my life at the top of the order when the ball's doing a little bit than Marcus Harris.
Yeah, and I think that's fair to say that. I think Marcus Harris's big issue, he's got two big issues at the moment. It does appear that selectors and pundits are putting an asterisk next to runs made at the Junction Oval or the MCG. Gee, whether that's fair or unfair.
Do you think it's fair? You've been watching it. You're the best placed in this.
In my view, runs are runs. In my view, runs are runs.
Really?
Yep. Mm. But I think that I do think it actually has to be considered. I don't think it needs to be as strong as...
runs are runs, you're picking Cooper, aren't you? Straight, and he'd be batting four for Australia. No, but Cooper was making more runs than Doolan before that Shield match.
The other thing with Harris, which I think it's something he's not going to be able to beat, is the fact that he and Warner are too similar.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can play both of them in the same team.
What, character-wise?
No, just the way they play.
Okay.
Just I think to have both of them at the top of the order, they're too similar. Not just the fact they're left-handed, but the way they play, my gut feeling is you're going to only play one of those two.
Marcus Harris-Shield average, as you mentioned, and Adelaide, it's 30.3. It's Brisbane, it's 15.44. That's where the first two tests are being played.
And I think that has counted against him.
That's just his Shield average at those venues.
Mm-hmm.
And Burns at the Gabba? Well, absolutely. Pick him. Play him.
Well, pick Khawaja at the Gabba.
Well, that's the other side of the argument. If they want an opening batsman, why doesn't Khawaja just go out and speak at a media conference and say, I do not want to bat at 3 or 4 anymore. My record, I average nearly 100 opening the batting for Australia.
Which he does.
He does. So why doesn't he? He put his hand up.
You know what I reckon? I reckon Usman Khawaja gets victimised. I reckon he gets so harshly treated.
Yeah.
And I don't know why.
By who?
Just, I think everybody, but even selectors.
For what
even,
reason?
He's seen as the whipping boy.
Surely selectors aren't seeing him as the whipping boy. Surely they are.
Well, he has been. He always has been.
Does he want to open the batting? Most of those runs were scored over in the UAE, wasn't it, when he opened the batting there?
No, he scored runs for Australia.
Yeah.
Well, in Australia opening the batting. I think with Usman Khawaja, he has this laconic nature about him that it feels like he's not trying. Or that, he had to lose 10 kilos because he wasn't,
You can relate to him.
Well, I need to lose more than 10.
Not looking gracious with...
We don't do that in here.
Now,
averages 96.8 after 7 innings opening the batting.
Yeah.
That's a good record.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
I think his laconic nature, the way he gets out, counts against him when they're stacking players up against each other. And I think if you look at his career over a long period of time, particularly in Australia, I would trust him second behind Steve Smith.
What's the Indian spinner? The two...
Harbhajan Singh?
No, Jadeja. He only plays in India, really, doesn't he? Test matches?
Pretty much because of the conditions, yeah.
Yep. Well, I don't understand why
horses Khawaja, for courses.
I don't understand why Khawaja is not playing in Australian conditions on that record.
52.97 averages in Australia.
I can't work
out. See, that's a big number.
I don't get that.
Yeah. I can't work out why Patterson's not playing in front of Stark.
Well, that's a 50-50 call, that one.
He averages one in Bangladesh, Usman. Maybe that's why he's not playing. Let's turn our attention to the world of domestic cricket. The Sheffield Shield is a drawn game played at the Adelaide Oval in the last 4 days, and Alex Doolan was the star for Tasmania, 170 not out in the first dig, and then 116 to just make it even Stevens in his second dig, and he joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Alex.
Morning.
Great to have you with us. Big numbers there, Alex, big numbers, and you've been a pretty consistent performer through the last 12 months or so in Shield cricket. You've had a decent-ish season. What's been the big result this week against South Australia at the Adelaide Oval? How come you went so big?
It's a good question. If I knew that, I'd be a lot more consistent, I think. But, no, look, I think there are always games where things go your way. I actually got dropped a couple of times in both innings, so things would have been very different. but, yeah, very, very proud and pleased with the way I played this week.
Well, they're big numbers, and you gave your team a chance to square it up and draw the match, which is, I imagine, for a bloke who's been around for quite a while, as you have, that the performance of the team is more significant than your performance, and to keep them away from a loss is just as important as a big score. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think certainly as I've aged, I've realised, I mean, I don't think I was ever a selfish player when I was younger, but certainly the importance of team and... as you get older, you realise that you've got less games that you're going to be able to win. So, to go so close and give ourselves a chance to win the game was very pleasing, considering that we were probably outplayed for the best part of 3 days by South Australia. So we gave it a real shake and came very close, but just couldn't quite get over the line.
Alex, from your own situation, your ability to score big, and not just hundreds, but double hundreds, what sort of skills have you got that perhaps other elite batsmen around the country don't have with your ability to capitalise from such a position of strength to go even bigger?
I don't think I've got any more skills than anyone else, really. I think there are probably players out there with a lot more skill than what I've got. I think it's been a real focus for me. Probably earlier on in my career, I threw away a lot of good scores. A lot of 60s and 70s, so it's been a focus for me, certainly, that when I get in, I try and cash in as much as I can. So all about sort of making the 100 and then reassessing where I'm at and making sure that I stay in there and don't just make the 100 and get out. So I certainly don't think it's a skill thing. It's very much a mental thing.
Almost like a maturity thing.
Yeah, absolutely, and I don't think that's any secret. As we, the more we play, the more we mature. But like I said, it's certainly a mental thing. It's not a skill thing.
So you're 33 at the moment, and you've played Test cricket. Do you think you're a better cricketer now than you were when you played for Australia?
I think mentally, definitely, a better cricketer, a better not skill wise. I think probably when I was at the peak of my skill was when I was playing Test cricket. I thought I was hitting the ball well. I had a lot of shots, but I certainly wasn't mature enough at the time. And that's funny to hear because I was 28 at the time. You think I would be mature enough, but I certainly wasn't. I didn't work hard enough at my game at the time. I thought I was going okay, and realistically, I had a lot of work to do.
So, Alex, then, in your opinion, when does a cricketer fully mature?
Well, I think that everyone sort of matures differently. I think as a batter, mentally, you're sort of looking to understand your game completely at around about the age of 27, 28. If you can do it before then, you're very, very lucky. I think someone like a Phil Hughes was an exception. He was a superstar at a young age. Steve Smith the same. But really, Steve sort of, he started to be a world beater at the age of 27, 28. Prior to that, he was a very, very good player, but he was not the player that he is now. So cricket's a game where I think it's so much between years is determines how good you can be. You need to be a little bit long in the tooth to be the best player you can be.
Tom Boyd's a name that we all know very well in the world of football. Former number one draft pick in 2013, played 61 games in his AFL career, including had a very famous premiership in 2016 for the Western Bulldogs, but next year he's heading into the ranks of amateur football after playing in the suburban comps this year at his old club. I want to find out why. Tom Boyd joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Tom.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. Firstly, just on playing football outside of the AFL bubble, how refreshing has it been for you? You played at Norwood in the Eastern Footy League this year where you played your junior stuff. How refreshing was it to play footy without all that comes with being in the AFL bubble?
Yeah, it was. It's a great question. I think the best part for me was, you know, being able to finish a game, win, lose or draw, and go home and not take it home with you, to be able to go home and still have the energy and that level of fatigue is a lot lower, so you can go out and have dinner and get on with your week without being sort of knocked about for a couple of days afterwards. So it was quite refreshing.
It's a a big move to go from your junior footy club to then go back into the amateurs. So talk to us about the reasons around the shift again.
Yeah, good question. Look, so obviously Nord were really accommodating last year because I finished up in May at the AFL level and I was really keen to get back involved at footy at some level last year. I had, 6 or 7 months basically before the end of the season. And like I said, Nord were extremely gracious and accommodating for me to get back involved. But I think for my professional career and being in the industry of sort of getting into some public speaking and more of the white collar work, it was always going to be, appealing for me to get involved at the amateur level. I think I thought about this a long time ago. And as sad as it is for me to leave my local club, I think, for me and Anna, my fiance, and the rest of our lives, at least for this stage, looks like the best option for us. So really excited to get involved at St. Kevin's.
Daniel Harford's the number one ticket holder at St. Kevin's, they tell me. Did he have any influence on you heading across to St. Kevin's? And if so, what?
No recruitment needed. Okay. I haven't spent a lot of time with Harf, but I'm sure we'll cross paths in the near future.
I'll be cheering you on from the sidelines, Tommy. Don't worry about that. That'll be a big part of the Saturday afternoon experience for the Harford clan to head down to TH King, the home of footy, Gareth.
Yep.
The home of footy.
And so what does the number one ticket holder do at St. Kevin's?
He doesn't do a lot. I'll give you the tip.
Hey, Tom, you speak about the public speaking that you want to do. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what's going to be the theme of those chats?
Yeah, look, so it's already underway. I'm sort of putting together my presentation and it's developing every day, which is really exciting. But I've sort of done a range of speaking gigs at the moment across the corporate sector and also through the youth and the schooling system. So I find it really enjoyable and I sort of cover a little bit about my experiences as a sportsman and that's from a junior level all the way through the AFL ranks and also a little bit about the struggles I've faced and, how I've overcome some of them and some of the lessons I've learned along the way. So I found, that it's really refreshing for me. It's really enjoyable and hopefully some people get some stuff out of it that's really helpful.
So we're seeing cricketers at the moment going through their own personal struggles, particularly a couple in Victoria. Would you be well equipped enough to sit down with them and talk about your experiences and how you dealt with it with them?
Well, I think the clear defining point of that statement is that I only speak about my experiences. I'm not a medically trained professional and I would never assume to know enough to help them deal with their issues. But look, professional sport, as we know, is a strange beast and there's many layers to it that have been added, I suppose, over the last 10 or so years with the change of technology and the rise of social media. So, my challenges are somewhat unique, but also at the same time, I'm sure the cricketers are facing significant challenges being on the world stage, and it's a completely different animal to what I'm going through, or what I went through, I should say.
Tom, if the AFL came to you as a consultant and they said that you could change anything you wanted in the professional game of AFL, what would you change?
Good question. I think there's real merit to giving the boys a later start to pre-season, just from my perspective. But look, I think the AFL has made some significant steps in the off-season in bringing in the mental health panel that they did, and I think that they're probably best equipped to change some of the policy-level items in the AFL to hopefully make a significant positive change in the space of mental health.
If you were 16 or 17 again, Tom, would you do anything differently?
No, that's a good question. I get it asked quite often. I wouldn't change a thing. Look, I had some serious struggles playing AFL footy and I also had some really, really positive moments as well. And the only reason I'm here today and doing what I'm doing and as happy as I am and healthy and moving on to the next stage of my life in a good shape is because I went through that stuff and it's going to hold me in good stead into the future, I think, having gone through some adversity and also some triumphs, I suppose, through that whole system.
Do you think, Tom, that younger people these days put more pressure on themselves, more higher expectations on themselves, not just as athletes but just as people, and that's one of the challenges of a younger person these days?
Well, I think naturally sportsmen have always been high-achieving, just in my opinion. But I think the challenge these days is disconnecting from that level of commitment that they have to their sporting. And, look, across the board, I think that social media and technology in general gives us this ability to connect and a sort of sense of unreal lives around us, and that everything around us is going perfectly for other people. So comparatively, we're always struggling to find that perfection. And I think sporting people in general have always been super high achieving, and that's the way it's always been. But I suppose trying to get away from that and finding self-value outside the sporting realms in their life is probably the number one issue that people are finding these days.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.